It is a truth universally acknowledged that exercise is good for you. Yet you would have never caught me doing it if it wasn't mandatory. My best friends growing up were figure skaters, ice hockey players, synchronized swimmers, or did track, and I never envied their early mornings. But as old age has crept upon me, I knew I should start before I couldn't anymore. But it was such a chore. That runner's high could never measure up to playing Civilization until 2 in the morning. Eventually, I got there, but it wasn't until I found I could make it fun. Welcome to Self-Help Junkie, the podcast where we explore the world of personal development through the eyes of book enthusiasts. I'm your host, Erica Ng, a communication coach and your resident bookworm. This season, we'll be focused on finding purpose, motivation, and inspiration. But before we dive into the conversation with our guest, let's get a one-minute summary of the book. The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg guides us through how habits are made, molded, and forged by first examining why they exist. Habits exist to save our brain's effort. Rather than thinking about what to do, we can go into auto drive and leave that power to make other decisions. You create habits in a loop. Cue, routine, reward. Everyone already has some, and it can be as simple as getting hungry, eating, then feeling good. Keep in mind the golden rule of habit change. You cannot extinguish a bad habit, you can only change it. You'll still have the same old cue and reward, but you need a new routine. And it's most important to change the keystone habits, which have a domino effect on other habits and matter more than others. For example, establishing a good bedtime routine. That helps us get to sleep at the right time, which makes it easier to wake up the next day. And that means we have enough time to have breakfast rather than running on pure caffeine, which is going to put us in the right mood for the rest of the day. It's also important that when doing something that relies on willpower, that people feel like they have control and choice, which is what we'll be focusing on today. And with that, let's dive in. Meet Sanya, a pharmacist and vibrant healthy eating coach with 12 years of experience in the health industry. Dedicated to turning healthy eating habits into superpowers, she infuses fun and irresistibility into the journey. With a passion for both health and enjoyment, Sanya uniquely blends her pharmaceutical expertise with a love of food, offering a dynamic approach to well-being through nutrition. Welcome to the podcast, Sanya.
Thank you so much, Erica. It's such a pleasure.
Before we dive into all of that, you are a healthy eating coach, and food is something that I think everyone has a different relationship with. So growing up, what was your relationship to food? Was it always like a fun activity for you?
Actually, no. So food has been a bit of a roller coaster journey in my life. I had a really poor relationship with it when I was a child, in that I often overate, and that's something that I still struggle with a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it comes from having like a big family, and there was a whole, you know, that we'd have one table of like buffet style food, and if you didn't get back there for seconds, or if you didn't take something, you might not try it. And so for me, right, that became like something I was like, I have to rush and eat, and I have to eat as much as I can. Right. And I think that's kind of why food has just been something that's really prevalent and become like a passion in my life, because I just want to, I don't know, enjoy food. I really like trying new foods, and I really like trying things. I actually have this really, let's say it wasn't a very COVID-friendly habit where when I went out with like my family, especially, I would get everyone else to order the things I want, and I just try what they had. Even now, like, it's very hard for me to go somewhere and not want to try everything on the menu, which doesn't make for a great, great eating relationship. So I think like that's kind of why.
Yeah.
It's a very, very common thing, I guess, to want to try everything. But for me, it just became a bit of like an addictive thing, where I really wanted to just try everything. And I just couldn't, I had that fear of missing out. I just couldn't let it go. And so that's something I've really been working on in the last decade or so.
Right, right. And I mean, I think, like you said, it's something that a lot of people can relate to, because I come from an Asian family, so sharing food, like, no one has just their own dish. You take a little bit of everything, so you get like a taste of the whole menu, right?
Yeah, and exactly.
It's wild to me when people are like, my food, like, you cannot have any of whatever I'm having. It's like, but what's the point of eating together if we're not going to share? So I get it.
I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess a lot of what you are bringing
to the people that you work with is this understanding. It comes from a place of having worked through it on your own and that you continue to work on. But the other side of all of this is that you want to make it fun. And I think often when people think of a problem that they have or something that they're struggling with in their life, it becomes this weight. It becomes something that you're like, oh, I don't really want to deal with it. But you use the word gamification, and I love that. Can you tell me more about how that came to be and where that came from?
Yep. First of all, I really like the word that you use the word weight in relation to like food problems, because I just find that hilarious. But I think a lot of it did come from that feeling. So growing up, I often had like a really big feeling of despair that I couldn't control my eating habits. And it was just something that was, I just had no control over it. And like probably about 7 years ago, I realized that's just not a way to live. Food is so essential to life. You can't give it up. So I started just going and experimenting with different ways to make food fun. And a lot of that involved changing like my purpose behind why I ate foods, my motivation, techniques. And I'm definitely not one of those people who can eat to live. I live to eat. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. I love food. I wouldn't be a healthy eating coach otherwise. But I think changing what that meant to me also really was important, because if you don't change your motivation, then you can just get stuck in those same patterns. And that's what I was finding, just getting, I try to change something and it wouldn't work. And then instead of being like, okay, brush it off, we can just move on for the next day, I would get stuck in this pattern that, oh no, it has to work. I'm so sure it's going to work. And then I just get stuck in a rut. And that's something that I really, really wanted to change. And so that's when I started bringing fun and gamification, because I love games. I like, it's not just board games. I love video games. I love any game. I recently went to an escape room and I was just like, time just flew. I was like, what is this? This is amazing. So bringing the element of fun into it just made it so much more motivating to actually change my eating habits. And having the gamification, which is kind of like adding game elements into that journey, just made me want to win so badly that it just became like something I couldn't stop doing, because I was like, okay, well, if I don't do my healthy eating habits today, then I'm not going to win. And I really want to win. Right. So I'm going to do them. And eventually that just became a habit. Like, even as the gamification dropped away, it just became like, okay, well, if I'm eating healthy, I'm getting more energy. I'm getting, you know, more nutrients. I'm able to actually see and think clearly. So all of those benefits just started rolling over. And I think with health, it's a bit funny, because you can do gamification for a short period of time, but unless you do it for a long period of time, those habits don't start ingraining. And because it's health, it's so easy to slide, because like basically everything is revolves around health. Right. So yeah.
And humans are very short-term creatures, right? Like, we can see what the result is now, but health is something like, in 50 years, you will have less back pain. Like,
exactly.
It's not very helpful. I have this, maybe we can start this together. I have this idea for AR, because AR, like, what's the use for it? What if we gamified everything? It's like plus 5 experience points every time you brush your teeth, or like if you eat a sandwich instead of like eating something deep fried, like you get this many points. Like, it would just help our short-term brains understand that this is good for you, and here is a reward for that.
Oh my gosh, Erica, we have to get onto that. Love that.
I'm not going to air this part, because someone's going to steal our idea. But let's dive into the book that you've brought to us today. You've already mentioned a little bit of like the concepts that were mentioned in there. Where were you when you came across The Power of Habit?
I could not tell you,
sorry.
Actually.
I mean, in life, not what location. That was my bad.
So I'm a big reader, but I usually stuck with fiction books until I was about 19.
Me too.
So yeah, fiction books are just so much more interesting and fun. Yes. So you can see, like, my whole life has just been like, how do I have more fun? So I only started reading nonfiction books around uni, and I kind of was always interested in personal development and habit formation. And so when I came across this book, The Power of Habit, I was like, okay, this is probably a good one to start with. And it just hooked me really fast because the whole book is basically an experiment. And I love experiments. That. It's why I became a pharmacist. I love doing random experiments, experiments of people's social lives. So
this might be something we have in common. I went to university for chemistry. So I also have like the idea of experiments all the time. Like when I hear my friends are dating like the same type of person or like getting back together, I'm like, why are you repeating the same experiment? Like you're not changing any factors. You're going to get the same result.
Yes, exactly. I do that the same way. So a lot of the book, The Power of Habit, basically talked about how to experiment with different parts of habit formation to create new habits. And for me, that was just like, oh my God, I have to like try this. I have to like prove that this can actually be done. And I kind of grew up in a family where it was like, okay, if you've, this is who you are, it's very hard to change. And for me, I have a bit of a rebellious streak in my nature. And I was like, no, if I can change my habits and I can become like this superpowered person, I'm going to become that. So don't get me wrong. I'm not a superhero or anything. And I definitely am not like superpowered all the time, but I definitely was on that path. And so I think reading that book was just incredible. I just thought, yeah, I just want to know how to become the best version of me. And I think that was the really great catalyst book to read. Yeah.
So you were talking about how you started running these different experiments. Do you remember any that were successful and then any failures that you also learned from?
So I wanted to start being a little bit more mindful in my life. And I thought the best way to start that was just by doing something boring. So I actually chose washing dishes. It wasn't something that I enjoyed, but it's kind of something you have to do. And we didn't have a dishwasher or anything, so it was all hand washing.
Right.
And so I thought instead of my habit at the moment was to wait until the dishes built up, massive amounts, and then strike it all at once. But I went into that scenario with a really negative attitude because I was like, oh my gosh, like there's so many dishes. How do I do this? Yeah. It's like you're literally climbing a mountain. So I actually decided that that was going to be my mindful experiment. So what I did was I changed my reward and I changed the cue. And so whenever the dishes reached the like level of my sink, I would be like, that's the cue for me to go and wash the dishes. And it actually, and during the process, I actually made sure I was thinking about nothing else. I wasn't thinking about how much of a chore it was. I was just like, I'm going to try and, you know, observe the dishes, observe what I'm feeling. I actually noticed that I actually get back pain when I wash the dishes, which is unusual. Like I didn't notice that before, but that could have been really contributing to why I didn't like doing it.
Right.
And so doing that meant that not only did the habit change, I was much more happier doing it. I was much more mindful of doing the dishes, but also I started to enjoy it because I was fixing all the things that were causing the negative thoughts and causing the problems in the process.
Right.
And so that kind of thing is where I used to like experiment. It's not the best example, but that's,
I think that it is a really good example. Like it's something that I can definitely relate to where you have something that you dread and that negative mindset, I feel like it's a coping mechanism, right? Where you're just like, it sucks, it sucks, it sucks. Like, I hope it's over soon. But if you can really, like you said, just figure out why it sucks. Like, I don't know, you're playing with bubbles. If a kid was in this position, like they may enjoy it. So like, how can we figure out what is actually negative in that situation and then bring it in? Did you have any failed experiments where you're like, that did not work at all? Like, I did not learn from this
one. I had a lot of bounce backs. I don't know about failed experiments. I always think like I learned something from the experience, but did have a lot of bounce backs. One that actually is food related and has been something that I had to really work at was mindful eating. And I know I'm bringing mindfulness into this a lot, but I'm a very big believer in single tasking because I find that when I multitask, I'm not really paying attention to either. You can't really switch between tasks or like do multiple tasks. Your brain is just switching between them anyway. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't getting the best results. So anyway, with mindful eating, I've had a lot of bounce backs. And that's where the gamification really came in handy because without changing the motivation and the reward at the end, it was a very long journey to get to where I am at the moment. And I think I had to play around with a lot of different cues, a lot of different rewards, a lot of different motivations there to try and actually get one that worked for me. Yeah.
Right. And we've been talking about cue and routine. I think cue is pretty easy to understand. It's like when you should be doing something or like when something starts. The routine is like the mental and the physical aspect of it. But when it comes to reward, I think because we have an idea of reward already, maybe in this context, it's a little bit different. It's not like, okay, I don't know, had a healthy eating habit. Like I had a successful day. I'm going to eat a brownie. Like that kind of is the opposite of
what you... failed experiment problems. I used to reward myself with food and I was like, oh, this is really not working well here.
Right. Like there's something I'm missing. I'm not sure what it is. The reward is good, but so yeah, look, when it comes to food, if you're trying to reward yourself and you don't want to reward yourself with food, right? Because that would build a different habit. What kind of rewards were you testing out to see what worked?
There was a lot. Once I, you know, realized that food rewards are a bad idea, I actually moved to activity rewards, so experience rewards. And I think that worked out really well because when you're really time poor, experiences are hard to have unless they're really conscious. And so by creating my rewards as experiences, and I actually used a point system. So once I hit like 7 stars or, you know, 20 points, depending on what I was trying out at the time, I would give myself an experience that I wouldn't normally give to myself on a regular basis. So for example, I'd use massages as a really good reward, a walk in the park where like I didn't have to, you know, do anything. I would just go for the walk. And that seems like a non-reward. But for me, I love being outdoors and I love taking walks by myself. I find that it's really like cathartic. Right. So that was a really good reward. I would also make it a social thing. And so if I did really well, I'd be like, hey, let's, for example, go to an escape room because I love escape rooms.
Yes.
And so those kind of rewards, like the experience rewards, they formed a lot of not only social connections, but they also gave me a very big sense of satisfaction that I was trying something or getting something like that was really relaxing.
Right.
And that really helped move me a little bit further in my habit formation journey, because just by connecting something I really loved that wasn't food related, I was disconnecting from the food a little bit. And that was really important, I found, because creating that disconnect also helped me, you know, improve my body image, improve my self-esteem, all of those things improved as well.
Right. And this is reminding me of one of my friends who was trying to quit smoking, and he kind of did this as well, where he was like, okay, if I'm feeling bored, what could I do instead of smoking? And then like you feel a sense of accomplishment, or he would be stressed out, so he'd go take a walk. And then there's usually a dog outside. So that was his reward. Like he would get to pet a dog, like really simple things that I think in a very fast paced world, we tell ourselves like, oh, I don't know, like going for a walk, it's such a luxury. Like I should be doing this other thing instead. But if you're like, it's, well, I earned it. Like I did this many things so I can go for a walk. Like what a wonderful way to reward yourself and take care of yourself.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think like doing those kind of things also promotes the idea of celebration. And I think that's something that's really lacking in goals these days. Like we're in a go society, which is great. Like we get so much done, but without celebrating and taking the time to just really, you know, absorb the fact that you've accomplished something. Like it may not even seem like a big thing, but to me, mindfully eating was a huge thing because it was something I'd never done before. So really like celebrating that just made it stick so much like better and faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, yeah, I love that. I think that it is something that everyone needs to start doing, like slow down, figure out what you like. So one of the things that you'd mentioned previously in our pre-chat was talking about finding like what gamification styles people have. Can you tell me more about that? I'm really interested. I want to know what my style is so I can optimize my life better and have more fun.
Sounds good. So when I say gamification, I use gamification elements to create very personalized fun journeys. Mm. And to do that, I really need to know someone's fun styles. So if you don't mind, I can do an example for you.
Yeah,
if you don't.
Please. Yeah, okay. We might cool. be the exact same. So we'll see if there's any variety.
Okay, so what's your favorite game?
Ooh, that's such a broad question. I think I'm quite similar to you. I love optimizing and problem solving. So like a lot of the video games I play are like management games. It's like, you're a dictator of an island. What should be the tax system here? It's like, you're now in charge of a zoo. Like, how are you going to feed and finance everybody? Like, very like management type and like problem solving types of games. Yeah.
Okay. No, fair enough. So, well, you pretty much like classified what your interests are or like what makes you tick. Mm-hmm. So for example, for you, I would, let's say you had like a goal. Mm-hmm. I would use those elements. So you like increasing efficiency. You like trying mm-hmm. out different like methods mm-hmm. and you probably like puzzle solving. So mm-hmm. using those tools, we could, for example, I don't know if you've heard of Lily Singh, but she is a comedian, a YouTube comedian.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And she did this podcast once, which was amazing. And she said every time she goes through her day, she takes note of the things that are inefficient and she improves them immediately at the end of the day. And so her life just becomes really like more and more efficient every day. And so those kind right. of elements where we could take something in your goal that was inefficient and we could find ways to make it more efficient, and that would increase your joy levels.
Right.
And again, puzzle solving, like if you, for example, wanted to exercise more, we could find out ways that would help you do like puzzle solving. Like, how do you improve one muscle group by pushing yourself a little bit further? How do you find an exercise that is fun, but also makes you more muscular or more fit or more like have more cardio experience? Clearly not. That's not the right word, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. Increasing your XP. We're like starting our marketing for the AR that we're going to build.
Exactly. And if you had like a social element to it as well, it's always good to find, I think social element's actually one of the biggest motivators for people. So you could find like an accountability group. You could have a friend that you specifically see to do an activity with. Mm-hmm. And that would also increase your fun levels. And I think that like, using those and just adding tiny pops of joy into your goal setting process, that ends up being really motivating. And it just ends up, that's how it becomes a superpower, because you're like, why would I not do this?
Right.
My favorite example is finding the absolute smallest thing you can do for a goal and do it every day. So if we're looking at like healthy eating, make sure you add one extra vegetable into each meal. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's doable. Like that's not a hard thing, you know? If it's exercise, do one push-up a day. That's laughable. If you can't do one of something, it doesn't have to be a push-up, because I do know push-ups are a bit technical sometimes, but like a squat or a lunge. You could lunge just by like vacuuming. You know, like it's not hard. So just finding like the absolute smallest thing you can do towards your goal, it's just an easy win. And I think like that, that's how I increase gamification. It obviously depends on like the level of the goal and where you are at versus where you want to be. But adding those small bits of joy in just make it just really fun. You end up being able to do it a lot more because you just are enjoying yourself. Yeah. And for me specifically, I love having a secret giggle like, oh my gosh, I did it. And like, how could I not do this? So I'm definitely always going to do it. So yeah.
Right. And as you were talking there, back to the management games, there's a lot of charts and numbers, and I've always found tracking to be a very nice way where I have these insane to-do lists where it's like the number of, basically minutes that I think that would take. And then when I do it, I'm like,
I did it in 27 minutes instead of like 35 minutes, then I feel like I've won. And I'll keep track of like all the things that I've done that day. And yeah, I love checklists. I love having like, I have reading goals where I'm like, okay, every month I want to be able to read this many books. Like I am 33% of the way to my monthly goal and I'm this far away from my annual goal. And like other people look at my spreadsheets and they're like, you're insane. Like this looks like extra work and extra bureaucracy, but for me, it's really fun. So I think like what you were saying, it's really important to find your style. Don't just copy what works for someone else because it might become torture for you. Yeah.
100% agree. And I actually really like the spreadsheet thing. It's a lot of work in the back end. Mm-hmm. Once you start using it, it's easy. And it's like, and you can see your progress.
Yeah. There's like colors, like things color coded. I don't know. That's the stuff that gets me going. So, I feel like the way that both of us work, might be a little bit more similar than how someone else works. Is there some other gamification style that would be kind of different and that you've seen and worked with your clients on?
Yeah. So, one of the things that is really a really good gamification style is unpredictability. Ooh, so a lot of people don't like doing the same thing every day. Sorry, what did you say?
That stresses me out. Like I have like scheduled time for spontaneity. I'm like, okay, between this hour and this hour, we'll just see what comes up. But like, I don't like to just be spot. It's a struggle for me. I've told my boyfriend, like, if you ever plan a surprise trip for me, you have to tell me like 3 days in advance so I can pack properly.
That's the level of spontaneity you can handle. Yeah, yep, fair enough.
So I'm interested to hear this.
So I think unpredictability is one of the ones. It's a really good like drawing in agent. Mm. If you don't know what's coming, sometimes that's really good. Cause then, for example, I'm going to actually use an example because I've got one on here. So I like unpredictability, even though mm-hmm. I like order and I like doing the same thing. I like unpredictability in a certain sense. So what I do is I use a spinning wheel. Yeah. And every time I'm going to do my goal, mm-hmm. I hit my spinning wheel and whatever comes up, that's my goal for the day.
Whoa.
Yeah. So things like that, you can add unpredictability into it. And it just adds an extra level of excitement. So that's a really good one. Some people also, again, not something that I use very much, but I like doing my goals on my own just because it's personal and I can do it at my own pace. Mm-hmm. But some like creativity and social is really, really big in a lot of goal setting. Mm-hmm. So using social is easy because you just find a accountability buddy is probably the easiest way, but also using a personal trainer or I have one of my clients who used a personal trainer with a group of friends. So they were all doing it together. They were all competing against each other, really, but they were doing it together. So it was a bonding experience. And another one that's really probably a little bit underplayed is creativity. Mm. So in this sense, a lot of people don't like the same foods every day. I am not one of those people. I could eat the same thing every day. As long as I like it, once I find my like go-to meal, I'm like, yep, I'm just going to have that forever.
Right.
For at least a few months.
Right.
But my husband's not like that. He needs a different meal every day. And so for him, if we were going to do a gamification style thing, I would choose like you need to use a different ingredient every week or choose a food blogger and do a different recipe from them every week. And I think that adds a level, again, of unpredictability because you don't know what it's going to come out like.
Right.
And it's a bit of an experiment in itself.
Right.
not always the greatest food experience. But it does add a level of, I guess, fun into it because you're not eating the same foods every day and you are trying something new. And it does depend a little bit on your stress levels with the trying new foods every day, but it's definitely something that can boost your happiness and fun levels. Yeah.
Right. Like you were saying, it doesn't have to be every day. Maybe it's like on the weekend when you have a little bit more time. My sister ran this, I guess it was inspired by Hell's Kitchen or one of those cooking shows where it's like, and the mystery, Iron Chef, like the mystery ingredient is this. And then She basically like ran a little TV show with her friends, like groups of them were all cooking, but you could do like a mini version of that where you like each get something for the other person to cook with, and like it could be really fun.
Like, yeah, it doesn't I love have to that. Be complicated. Oh my gosh. You're giving me so many ideas, Erica. I love it. Okay, cool.
This is the best when we can like kind of work off of each other. But yeah, this is, I think, really fun. And I think that a lot of people could benefit from this. Do you find that people's willpower when it comes to gamification changes over time? Because I can imagine like, you're like, it's January, I'm going to like do all these things. I'm going to gamify my life. And then it does take willpower to like keep it going. Do you feel like people peter off at all?
I actually don't, because The definition of play is it's something you don't have to do.
Mm.
So by gamifying it, even though there's still an element of it is something you have to do and it's something you're working towards, by adding the whole fun and gamification into it, you take away some of that need for willpower. Mm. And that for me and my coaching is really important, because willpower is a finite resource.
Yeah.
So if you're using willpower as a source of motivation, you're going to find that as time goes on, your motivation is just going to wane really quickly because you don't have that much willpower and you need it for other things. Like there are certain things that require willpower on a daily basis. And so you're already pushing yourself to the limit if you're using willpower alone. So that's why gamification is important, because you're adding the fun element. It takes away some of that need for willpower. For example, if we're going to use a game reference, You know how when you get more XP in a game, Generally moves take less energy to perform. Mm-hmm. So if you're battling someone, you will run out of energy slower once you get more XP. So that is what I see as gamification in health, because You're using less energy to do something you actually enjoy. And as you get further and further along your journey, It's just going to become effortless. And that's why I call it a superpower, because You're using very minimal energy to push yourself in the direction you want to go, and you're making it fun. And it's Just like, when I imagine it, I'm like, you're doing something and you're just like on star power in Mario Kart. You're like,
walking on sunshine, nobody can touch me. I think that's nice to hear, because a lot of life is working on yourself and improving. And if it can be easy, even if it's not for everything, just like a part of your life that it's been stressing you out, what a wonderful gift to give people. You said that this might be a little bit personal. You said that at the top that food is something that you still are working on, some like the relationship, you're still working on that. So gamification has definitely improved it. Where have you found that you still struggle?
So in 2019, I quit sugar. And I did it for health reasons. I was pre-diabetic, and I just decided that that was the easiest way for me, because I do have a bit of an addictive personality. And if I start eating sugar, it's very hard for me to stop. So I decided to just cut it out. And I think that's the area where I struggle a little bit, especially because a lot of special occasions like birthdays, Christmas, holidays, all of those revolve around food. And specifically, they revolve around special sweet treats. So right now, we're leading up to Easter. I know it's still January, but in Sydney, we're leading up to Easter. There's already hot cross buns. And hot cross buns are delicious.
Yeah.
But they are full of sugar. And unfortunately, that is something that does coincide with a lot of special occasions. And it does actually, it kind of gives the, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very synonymous. Like festivals are very synonymous with sweet and sugar. And so that's where I really struggle a little bit, because like I said, it's very hard for me to have one and then let it go. And I'm fine with not having any, but the social pressure combined with the fact that it's delicious food, combined with the fact that some foods you don't eat all year round. So like trifle at Christmas, I love trifle. So I find it's actually really hard to bounce back from that. And so that's one area where I do struggle. However, I have strategies in place that I've built up over the last 4 years to combat that. And that's where like it becomes a lot easier each time I do it. Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Sugar and alcohol, like every celebration, those two things come out, which is crazy as a society. Like, should we be celebrating the things that are not healthy for us? Yeah.
I think that probably in, like, when it first started, it probably did make sense because, especially for low economic class people, they wouldn't have had access to those foods all the time. So it would be a really great occasion to, you know, splurge and be able to make all those things. But now, because it's so readily available, there's no boundary between the festival and everyday life. And so you could have a trifle and then for the next 5 days, you could be like, well, I feel like another one. So I'm just going to have it. And so I think that's where it just becomes really important to have like good strategies in place that you don't get sucked into that like spiral of just continually eating things that you don't want to include in your diet.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do think as a society, we've started shifting towards healthier options. Like I don't drink often now, but I'll still go out to the bars with friends and they'll be like, oh, what are you having? I'm like, a soda water. Like I'm having tonic water tonight. And it's gotten to a point where people are like, okay, cool. Like they don't ask like, oh, do you have to work tomorrow? Like, why are you doing this? And hopefully that changes over into sugar or just like whatever choices people are making. I had a point there, but I've forgotten why I was talking about that. The other thing is I've been seeing this trend on Instagram. It might be on TikTok going over to Instagram, but I'm old. I don't do TikTok. But there's this girls gone mild. So like bachelorette parties where instead of like going, getting drunk and doing all this stuff, they're like, we have mindfulness in the morning and we like journal together and then we go get a massage. And I'm like, that's what I want. Like I want girls gone mild. That's what my life is now.
Yeah. You said it and my face just lit up. I was like, whoa, I need this in my life.
Yes. Yes. Just like we sit around and talk to our friends about feelings. Like that's what I want.
Oh yes, 100% agree. Yeah. But I just want to talk about something you just touched on. Mm-hmm. I love that you said you choose tonic water and now people don't question it. And I think that's one of the big hurdles that people struggle with because when I quit sugar, that initial like 4 months where I had to tell people I don't eat sugar, I'm not eating this, that just was met with so much resistance. Mm-hmm. And I think without having a really strong purpose, that can really make you fall off the wagon a little bit. So I think that's one of the areas where I really like to focus on, setting boundaries and being able to stick to them because that's something I struggled with. I hate disappointing people. And a lot of people are like that. You know, you don't want to, especially when it's people you love who are making food with love for you, you don't want to disappoint them. You don't want to be like, okay, you just put all this effort in and I'm like, no, I don't want to have it. And so getting strategies to put like keep this boundaries in place and stick to what you're saying. There's so many benefits to that, but it is incredibly difficult. And if I'm going to just keep going back to the game example, but it is like performing a move that needs a lot of energy and effort in the beginning is always going to be hard. Right. So I think that's really, really important. And I like that you said that because now I'm in the same position where people don't offer me sugar or they'll tell me like, oh, I've made this for you without sugar, which I appreciate so much. Like I love that people do that for me. Right. And I'm so grateful that I have people in my life who will do that for me. So yeah, I think that's something that's really difficult. And that's definitely an area where I focus a lot of energy on in my coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the emotional labor of educating someone what you're going through, like you have been living it, you understand the severity of it, but they might be coming in with no information and it's a lot of work to tell them. Do you have any tips for people who are struggling with that? Like any way of either getting their family members or friends to understand or like a way to seek allyship so it's not just you having to face this on your own?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the first thing is always to communicate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You might get resistance, but if people understand a little bit better where you're coming from, they don't feel attacked. And I think this is where it's really important. If someone is trying to convince you to go against what you want to do, often it's them feeling like that you're reflecting a part of their personality that they might want to change but can't. Right. And so you're exposing a flaw or a weakness for them, and they feel like it'll be easier if they didn't have to see that. Mm. So communication is really important. And remembering that if you're pleasing someone else at the detriment of yourself, that's going to have a lot more long-term consequences for you. So in those kind of situations, it's really important. I used to tell myself, like, yes, you know, whoever is unhappy, they're unhappy that I'm not, you know, sitting in their expectations of me. Mm-hmm. However, am I sitting in the expectations of myself? Am I bettering myself by, you know, giving into what they want? No, I'm not. I'm putting myself in a worse off position, not only just like my self-esteem, my health. My health at that point was really like at a place where I really need to improve. So that's really important. You have to decide what's more important. Is it more important to be what other people expect you to be or be what you expect you to be? And I think that's that was a really big mindset shift for me, because if I'm constantly unhappy, that's in my control. I can control what I'm feeling. I can't control what other people are feeling. Mm-hmm. So looking at who you're pleasing, are you pleasing them or are you pleasing yourself? It sounds really selfish, but in personal development, you have to come first. Mm-hmm. If you can't put your own gas mask on, you can't help anyone else. Oxygen mask, not gas mask. I can really stop saying that. I don't know why you keep saying gas mask. Sorry, you put your own oxygen mask on first.
For sure. Oh my God. No gas mask. We do not.
Okay. Yeah, so those two things are really important. And lastly, I would say that it's your self-talk is super important. And this is something I'm really passionate about, because if you're changing your self-talk, that just makes putting boundaries in place so much easier, because you're building your self-confidence, you're building your self-trust, and you're making yourself look better in your own mind. And I think that's really important, because a lot of people who do struggle with food issues also struggle with self-esteem and body issues. Mm-hmm. So if you're changing the picture of yourself in your head, even if someone else tries to go against that picture, you probably be like, well, that's not how I see myself anymore. So changing your identity and changing how you speak to yourself about what you're doing, right, that's like super important as well.
Right. As you're talking through all of that, I think mindfulness is something that's reoccurring, right? Like, you have to take enough time to know how you're feeling, because in those social situations where you're feeling pressure to do something, you don't have the willpower to stop it. But if you can take a step back, whether it be before or after, and come into what you're doing with purpose and with mindfulness, it's much easier to justify to yourself. You don't need everybody else to understand. You just need to understand and keep that to yourself. So this has been such a fun conversation, but we are coming to the end of the episode. If people are excited about what they heard here today and they want to find you, where could they find you?
So I like hanging out my Facebook group. It's called Cracking the Consistency Code. It's a free Facebook group for anyone who has any goal. It doesn't have to be a health goal, but we do focus on health in there. And just being consistent, because consistency is pretty much the catalyst to becoming a superhero. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's one place. I also like hanging out on Instagram at Sunshine and Sandy Pants. Mm-hmm. And there you'll probably see me post a couple of videos. They might be a bit weird and they'll definitely include some kind of song in there, but they'll be very health focused as well. I also have a website, www.sandiegocool.com.au. That's where you can really find my blog posts and how to work with me. And yeah.
So it seems like you're very focused on like healthy eating. If people have another area that they're struggling with, but they want to gamify, can they also reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I fantastic. Love working with everyone on anything they want to work with. And gamification, I can apply it. We can apply it. Right. Any area.
So, right. Yeah. Sometimes you just need someone to like brainstorm with and like keep you accountable. Yeah. So okay, great. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been such a pleasure. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This podcast was brought to you by me, Erica Ng, and my sound guy, Stevie, who is the reason there was a huge upgrade in the quality between episode 4 and 5 of season 1. If you enjoyed, please send this episode to a friend who could use the advice or someone who would find this a great listen. If you have thoughts or tips you'd like to share, please do at Self Help Junkie Pod on Instagram, Twitter, or Gmail. I'll see you guys next time.